It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. This Wednesday was Holocaust Remembrance Day, Yom HaShoah, when we mark the slaughter of millions of Jews, political dissidents, gays, and others at the hands of the Nazis. Illinois marks the occasion with an annual memorial service in the old state capitol. The event includes the recollections of a Holocaust survivor, and today we're going to hear one such story from back in 2014. On the night of November 9, 1938, Doris Vogel was living in Berlin. She was 4 years old, the daughter of a widow. That was Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, when the Nazis burned and vandalized Jewish homes, businesses, and synagogues across Germany and Austria.
President Roosevelt, in a statement without precedent, speaks out against the persecution of minorities in Germany. He says he could scarcely believe such things could occur.
About 100 Jewish citizens were killed that night, but Vogel says no one could predict the horrors yet to come. Fortunately, family friends helped Vogel and a few relatives escape Germany before the Nazis ramped up their program of genocide. And this is where our story begins.
My aunt and uncle, as I came to call them, managed to arrange passage for us in 1939 out of Germany on the ship Scharnhorst from Bremerhaven. And at that moment, we became refugees, outward bound for Shanghai, China. The port city of Shanghai was for many Jews, after the terrifying events of Kristallnacht, the last refuge that could be reached without a passport, visa, or affidavit, unlike the United States and Canada, who had already closed their doors. All that was needed to make the journey was money for a ticket. We had to sell most of our possessions to obtain passage out of our home country. And because Nazi Germany only allowed Jews to take a few personal possessions, most stepped off the boats beautifully dressed but penniless. In the years between 1939 and 1941, approximately 20,000 European Jews fled to Shanghai, one of the few safe havens in the world where one could go to escape the Nazis. Unfortunately, my grandparents, like so many other elderly people, could not and did not believe the rumors of the coming horrors and chose to stay in Germany. Shortly after the end of the war, we were notified that my father's parents died at the Dachau concentration camp, and it was almost 50 years later, on my first trip back to Berlin, that I found out that my mother's father died at the Sachsenhausen camp in Germany. I was 4 years old in 1939, and my memories of Germany were non-existent. Shanghai became my home. I attended an English-speaking Jewish school, which was built for the refugee children by Sir Horace Kaduri, a wealthy Jewish philanthropist from Hong Kong. I made friends, played sports, was active in school activities. In general, we saw American movies, we read books. I was happy, as were my school friends. None of us knew that we were poor, nor did we feel deprived, because we simply didn't know any better. When World War II started in 1941, the Japanese occupied Shanghai, and being allies of Nazi Germany mandated that all Jewish refugees live in a poverty-stricken, filthy, and unsanitary area of Shanghai called Hongkou. From 1944 on, sanitation, food, nutrition in the Hongkou area were very poor. Malnutrition and disease were rampant, with many dying from scarlet fever, typhoid, or malnutrition. In total, 2,000 Jewish refugees died in Shanghai between 1938 and 1948, and of these, 1,700 in the Hongkou ghetto, many from starvation. Overcrowding, poverty, hunger, disease, and yes, even prostitution became facts of life. And the greatest threat to the Jewish refugees occurred on July the 19th, 1942, when a German U-boat came into Shanghai Harbor carrying SS Colonel Joseph Meisinger, the infamous butcher of Warsaw, to serve as representative of the Gestapo from Tokyo to Shanghai. His mission was to pressure the Japanese to liquidate the Hongkou ghetto of its Jewish inhabitants. The plan, never implemented, involved rounding up Jews in the synagogues on Rosh Hashanah, loading them on ships to either starve or to place them in concentration camps. These plans were realistic, as the Japanese had already set up camps for thousands of Chinese prisoners. Fortunately, the Japanese Vice Consul Shibota was not interested in Meisinger's plans, and the SS had no real power in Shanghai. Life in Shanghai was primitive. Staying healthy was a constant problem. Food was rationed and obtained mostly from a soup kitchen. And I remember fighting with my cousin about a piece of bread. After all, he was a growing boy, and it was felt that he should get more than I. When I arrived in the United States at the age of 13, I weighed 65 pounds. Head lice was a common occurrence among a lot of the school children, and I remember vividly having my hair cleaned with turpentine to rid me of the lice, and when that didn't work, having my head shaved. In the camp where my mother, aunt, uncle, cousin, and I lived in a small room, we ate there, we slept there, and we washed in there. And for all the years that we were in the camp, we had to boil our water for drinking water, heat our water for washing our bodies, and cook our meals on a little Chinese stove stoked with little egg-shaped coals. There was no flush toilet, and we were expected to use the honey pot that the other inhabitants of the lane were accustomed to using. The honey pot was a portable toilet, and every morning a coolie would come around to collect the excrement, which was later turned into fertilizer. Temperatures in the summer could reach 125 degrees, and in winter it was around the freezing mark with no heat available. We lived among the starving Chinese citizens in a city without benefit of running water and modern sanitation facilities. We lived this ghetto life all through the war, including bombings by American planes in 1945. The unexpected happened this time.
Coming up, an American bombing run goes awry, victory in war leads to horrible revelations about Europe, and a new life in the new world. This is Illinois Edition. It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. Yom HaShoah happened this week, Holocaust Remembrance Day, when people around the world recall the systematic murder of millions of Jews, gypsies, gays, and others. Today we're hearing the story of Holocaust survivor Doris Vogel, who as a child escaped Berlin and spent World War II in China under Japanese occupation. She says life in the Shanghai ghetto was difficult, with disease and infestation, no running water or sanitation, and, as we pick up her story, American bombing runs.
On July the 17th, 1945, shortly before the war ended, our ghetto became the target. U.S. Air Force B-17s intended to knock out a Japanese military radio station located near our ghetto. Unfortunately, they missed, bringing death and destruction into our area. I was in school at the time, and to this day can remember crouching under our desks for protection. Finally, after what seemed like hours, but was actually only 2 minutes, we heard the all-clear siren. It was a couple of days before we were reunited with our parents. A month later, on the 15th of August, after the United States dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Emperor Hirohito announced the unconditional surrender of Japan. And on the 2nd of September, President Harry Truman officially proclaimed VJ Day as the Japanese surrender was signed aboard the U.S. battleship at Missouri at 10:30 a.m. Pieces here and shouts of joy rang through the ghetto. It was like a dream, and it seemed unreal. When peace came to Shanghai, so did the realization of what had happened in Europe. Rage and anguish was intense as people discovered their families and communities had perished. News that millions of the Jews had been killed in German concentration camps trickled into Shanghai. Shanghai Jewish Chronicle printed a series of articles about how Jews had been gassed to death and then incinerated in camps. Shutters of fear and horror rattled through the ghetto. Prayers, meetings were held in all the synagogues to honor those who had perished. People were filled with annoying anxiety about the fates of their relatives in Europe. Most had heard nothing from any of them since the outbreak of the war. Fears deepened as lists of survivors were posted and published. My mother and I left Shanghai for the United States in April of 1947 on a converted American troop ship, the SS General Gordon, and arrived in San Francisco on May the 17th, 1947. And the family that sponsored us lived in Peoria, Illinois, and that is where my life began in America. Our first glimpse of paradise was when we stopped in Hawaii on our way to America. Imagine turning on a faucet and having a drink of water without having to boil it first. On May 17, 1947, we passed under the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was an unforgettable morning. The sun was shining, and after having been seasick the better part of the voyage, we were all out on deck, waiting for our first glimpse of America. Everyone cheered, and then we cried. It was hard to believe we were here at last, and then we cried again for all those who didn't make it, for our countless relatives and friends who had ended up in Hitler's ovens. You all know the word Zakor, remember. Remember and never forget, and do not let others forget. Always remember that the impossible, the unthinkable happened, and unfortunately could happen again. Survivors are concerned about how the events of our lives will be described when we are no longer here to personally tell our stories. We have memories of our children, of vibrant and vital Jewish communities, of grandparents, parents, brothers, sisters, aunts. We each have our story to tell about surviving. And we have our own history of building new lives we want to pass along to the new generations. The stories of our experiences, we want to be sure that they include stories of Jewish life and culture before the Holocaust. And there are a couple of achievements of survivors that I always like to focus upon. The first is the strength our parents had to pick up the pieces of their lives that had been so cruelly interrupted and go on with life. And the second deals with the external factors after the war. Both America and the State of Israel offered us freedom and opportunity. After losing so much, we were deeply grateful for the generosity of these nations. We can look back now and be proud of what we have given in return, not just our work and our successes, not just our most precious possession, our children and grandchildren, but our spirit, our example, and our honor. We are respected today in this country and throughout the world because the community of mankind knows that we Holocaust survivors have something very valuable to impart. The experience of the Holocaust was unique, but has great meaning for all who treasure the free world, a place where every human being is safe to live. There is no answer to Auschwitz, no answer to hatred, brutality, and murder. There is no answer, only questions. Why? Why did so many innocents have to die? Out of the ashes of death and destruction, out of the flames that engulfed us, came the survivors, whose eyes have seen the horrors and whose ears have heard the screams. They tried to silence us, but our voices are still heard. They tried to destroy us, but we would not die. The chain has not been broken. The sheep led to slaughter are now lions, proud and strong. The yellow star of shame is now the courageous badge of life. They killed the Jews, but Judaism survives. They burned the Torah, but the words endure. The 6 million who perished, their voices silenced forever, left us a legacy we must remember. We are the survivors who live to tell the tale. We are the remnants who bear witness to the world. Thank you.
Doris Fogel shared her survivor story at Illinois' annual Holocaust Memorial Service in 2014. I'm Brian Mackey.